It's just fascinating how Paul interprets the story of Abraham, my friend, and how he just sees things in it that we have missed, perhaps. Let's look at it. Colin Cook here and How It Happens. This is a broadcast on training your faith in the gospel so that you can train your faith in how you intercept your struggles, whether they be compulsive or addictive or just the experiences of the world that just throw your faith, you know? Now then, we're looking at Romans chapter 4. Paul is demonstrating through this chapter that people are received by faith. That is, they are given God's righteousness. Now look, here is what he says in verse 13. For the promise that he would be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. Ooh, now wait a minute. Paul had started to talk about Abraham in chapter 4, verse 1, right back there in verse 1. But he didn't talk about this promise. What's this promise? I mean, he didn't use those words anyway. The promise, of course, was that he would inherit the land, that in him all families of the earth would be blessed. And Paul, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, takes this to mean that Abraham and his seed would inherit the world, not just that land, but the world, the whole seed of Abraham, all those who trust. Now, you see, the promise, it was a promise that he would not inherit the world, that he would inherit the world and not through the law. You can see by this verse where Paul has been going in the previous verses. You've heard me say that many times, haven't you? If you're not sure where Paul is going, then jump ahead a bit, and you will often see him draw a conclusion to what he has just said, so that in that conclusion is the summary of what he's just explained. Now then, he says that that promise did not come through the law. Previously, he had talked about circumcision, the law of circumcision, that was given after the promise. And a little later, he's going to talk about the law of 10 commandments. The point that you and I need to know right now, my friend, is that the promise to you does not come through the law. Now, understand what we mean by the law. He's not simply talking about 10 commandments on two tables of stone. Yes, that's included. But the law, you understand, as Paul has explained in chapter 2, is written on our hearts, and our conscience bears witness to it. So that the law speaks in your mind, and it says, you're guilty, or you're not guilty. Actually, it only says that you're guilty, because according to chapter 3, it says that by the law we become conscious of sin. Let me read that to you, 3 verse 19 and 20. Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law that every mouth may be stopped and all the world may become guilty before God. Therefore, by the deeds of the law, no flesh will be justified in his sight, for by the law is the knowledge of sin. So you see, if the law is in your mind, then all you are going to get is a consciousness of sin. Now, if you think the promise comes by the law, that is, by obedience to the law, then you will never have any confidence, because the law will only give you a consciousness of sin. Even when you seek to obey faithfully, and Christians do, as they believe and trust and go forward in faith, they do seek to obey. But as they do, they find themselves always obeying imperfectly and never completely and never understanding the whole issue of what they're supposed to be doing. If, therefore, your mind is berating you and saying you are guilty, you are ashamed, you ought to be ashamed, and you ought to be afraid, and you accept that that is the only message that you have, then you will never be able to grab hold of the promise of God. Now, you see, you understand how important this is to men and women struggling with various habits, right? If it's drugs or alcohol, you're working on that. sex addiction, food issues, gambling addiction, terrible worries, and a very dark, dour kind of state of mind. If you trust in the state of your mind, or in the victories you're trying to get and fail to get, then you will never be able to rest in the promise. But here is the good news. The promise that he would be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law. Well, then how did it come to them? If it didn't come to them through a conviction that they had obeyed and were repentant and faithful to God, and therefore God was going to give them the promise, if it didn't come through that, then what did it come through? Through the righteousness of faith. Now, what's that, though? Well, of course, back there in Genesis, God comes to Abraham and says, get up and go to a land that I will tell you of, and I will make you a great nation, and through your seed all families of the earth shall be blessed. Now, I don't know how Abraham heard that, whether he saw a vision, whether God visited him personally, or whether it was a deep conviction of the mind. But what I know is this, that Abraham believed it. Now, to believe that implies something about that faith in regard to God, doesn't it? What does it imply? It implies that Abraham has come to conceive of God as abundantly generous and merciful. Which is quite astounding when you think of it, that he was surrounded by these pagan gods that were always into, you give me this and I'll give you that, that were always into fear and guilt trips. People basically tried to assuage pagan gods, propitiate them, appease them. They seemed like mean gods, always trying to eke out their pound of flesh from us. And here, by some miracle of grace and revelation, Abraham gets the message that God is being wondrously kind and generous and saying, I will give you the land. He doesn't say, now, if you do this and if you do that and if you do the other and if I put you on probation for a while and see how you're doing, I will give you the land and through you all families of the earth shall be blessed. No. The promise comes by faith. Now, why does it say the righteousness of faith? Is it talking about a quality of faith that is righteous, or a faith that is trusting in a righteousness? Well, obviously, the whole context of righteousness by faith is the latter. That Paul is, by faith, trusting in a righteousness. Whose righteousness? God. God's generosity, God's defense of the poor. Well, I know Abraham wasn't poor, but I didn't mean in regard to finances. God's defense of the poor in spirit. Abraham did not have what he needed. He may have been wealthy, but his wife could not bear children. The one thing that Abraham needed, of all the things that he had everything except the one thing that he needed. And so, you see, Paul makes something stupendous out of this story. More accurately, he doesn't make something stupendous out of the story. He sees something stupendous in the story. This is where Paul, enlightened by the Holy Spirit and the revelation of what Jesus Christ has done on the cross, goes right back to the origins of Israel and say, well, how did it happen in the first place? If God is forgiving us now by the sacrifice of his son, he must have had the same attitude back then. All this nonsense about God saving God, God saving people by the law in the Old Testament and by grace in the New is just that. It's nonsense. He introduces the law, yes, but we'll see why a bit later. What we have here is the awesome origin of God's grace. And it is that he comes to you, my friend, with a promise. And boy, don't you need that? Don't we all need that? In these days when things just seem to be going awry and governments are falling apart and the world is coming to a massive economic crisis, I mean, we need a promise in order to keep going. And this is the promise. And it comes by trusting in God's righteous generosity, not through the law. It doesn't come to people who succeed in obeying. Now, what do you think I'm doing here? Do you think I'm diminishing the importance of obedience? No, I'm not doing that at all. I'm saying, what is the foundation that, well, rather, what are the wheels upon which obedience moves? If obedience moves by the law, we are stuck. The law has no wheels. But God has wheels. He moves us forward by a promise. And so, you see, you struggle with whatever kind of habit or difficulty you have. And your mind, through the law, will intimidate you. It will condemn you. It will say you are not worthy to receive this promise. But faith that you have will say, and I know you're training your faith, as I am mine, faith will say, no, I know I'm not worthy. I know I haven't completely obeyed. I know I haven't obeyed successfully at all, or I know I haven't obeyed at all. But I'm trusting in the one that God has given to me. The promise that I shall inherit the world has come through his seed, through Abraham's seed. That's Christ, not through me, not through my obedience, but through the seed. And I receive it by faith. And therefore you rejoice, my friend. Go ahead. Rejoice. There's a seminar coming up, my friends, on Saturday, the 30th of April. I hope you'll join me there because we're going to explore the forces of change that shape our life. You know, we often get confused the older we get about change, whether we've changed much, or, oh boy, we're the same old person we always were. And it gets us down sometimes, and we wonder what are the instruments, what are the keys by which we change? Well, listen, my friend, you'll get some surprises during this seminar because some of the changes we go through are quite unconscious. The growth that we make is going on by the work of the Holy Spirit even when we don't know it. But then there are conscious changes that come about by conversion, by putting faith in Jesus Christ and training our faith. And then, of course, there are changes by crisis, aren't there? You know, you've had some terrible crises in your life that have made you move in a totally other direction. And then there are changes that come about when we deal with the pains of our childhood so that we're no longer resentful or angry about what happened and we can move forward. So that's moving through the developmental phases of life, you see. So we're going to explore all of these in this seminar called Exploring How We Grow. I really look forward to seeing you there, some regulars and some new people whom I haven't met. So please join me on Saturday, the 30th of April at 9 in the morning. Come early so you can get a cup of coffee and orange juice. Come at 10 to 9, say, and we go through till 3:30. There's a break for lunch. It's at 7190 West Hampden Avenue in Lakewood. 7190 West Hampden Avenue, and admission is by donation. I'd like to recommend $70 to $110 if you can afford it, my friends. It helps the annual budget of the ministry, but if you can't, don't worry. All donations are gladly accepted. I look forward to seeing you then, and I'll see you next time. Cheerio, and God bless.